Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and always love being here with you. Love being able to share information, and certainly love being able to be in the spirit of true, real African liberation. Well, let's see, where do we begin? This has been a very interesting weekend. But of course, as usual, before we go into all of that and what we're going to talk about tonight for our primary topic, I always like to give thanks and praises to our Creator, to my Creator. And of course, we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Yesterday, to begin with, we did several things. One, we had a kind of what we have phrased it as Poli-Sci 101. Well, Poli meaning politics or political, and Sci meaning, S-C-I meaning science. So political science, Poli-Sci 101. What we realized is that there's a lot of stuff going on all over the country, and certainly with the push for people to vote, we feel that that's just not the thing to do, especially without adequate information. So yesterday, here in Philly, we held what we called a Poli-Sci 101 session that we're going to start doing monthly. And we might do a few of those even online, by the way. But the objective is to begin to really break down some of the political operations in this country so that those who do vote, will be voting, our voters, will do so in a much more intelligent manner. What that means is to not be as reactionary, to not be just, you know, falling into the hoopla, not just following behind somebody blindly, none of that. Our objective is to provide and be, you know, very informative, allow folks to really know and understand to a greater extent what this political, so-called political process is. And, I mean, how does it really operate? What can it do and cannot do? Because, I mean, over these past few years, especially in the situation with President Obama, it was like people were, yeah, he didn't do this, he's not doing that. Okay, so did y'all really think he was going to do all that? I mean, yeah, okay, of course, for his life president, you think he's going to do something. But come on, folks. This is America. Did you really think that he was going to be doing so much? I mean, that's just not realistic. So I thought that was really funny how folks are now kind of up in arms about different things that he's doing or not doing. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. I mean, did you really expect something? See, the game is not played that way. And because we don't control the game, most of us don't even know what the game is. Therefore, to have these grand expectations about certain things, it just makes no sense. So we want to try to begin starting to break some of that down so that people will not have these continual hallucinations or delusions about what they think this voting thing is or can accomplish. But we also need to focus on what we feel it can accomplish because, realistically to me, there are a few things, especially on the local levels, where a few things can get done. Now, having been in Philadelphia, I've traveled to around Trenton, other parts of New Jersey, New York, D.C., there's some things that are relatively the same. So what that means is that there's some areas that are definitely being controlled and manipulated on more of the local areas, the local dynamics. And can some advantages or some things can, in fact, be accomplished. So it really behooves us not to just totally dismiss this whole idea. I know that many do, and to be very honest, I'm not one to get too caught up into any of that either. But what I do feel is that it has its place to some degree, but again, to do so strategically, to do so with a certain type of intent, to develop components that is going to bring about a certain level of accountability, and so forth and so on. One of the things that we talked about last night, family, is that, you know, just to say that, okay, I voted for you. Okay. So now what does that really mean? That means that when that person goes up to Harrisburg, when that person goes up to whatever capital they're going to, or that state, if it's a state rep or if it's a senator, if they're going to D.C., when it is time to vote on things, they represent you, okay? That they represent you there. There are also things that they can go there and take as part of what the constituents in that particular area would like to have or see or whatever. Okay, great. And then they can go and take that forward so they can have some voting on it and blah, blah, blah. So they speak for their constituents or the people in their district when it comes to certain matters. Now, how does people think that that trickles down to it, or that has something to do with some other things? Well, it can, obviously, but certainly if say, that particular group or district or whatever is not organized, does not have an agenda or a platform in itself or something like that, then how do they think that elected official is going to represent them adequately on any other issues or any other real things? Not going to happen. And so there has to be some better idea of how things are, in fact, done. They don't just happen because, oh, I voted. No. You voted so you get certain things. You get certain services. But beyond that, guess what? It's not going to happen. It's not designed that way. And people need to really understand that. If you're talking about contracts or other kinds of things that involve, you know, monies that are available, whatever, which, again, I totally don't mess with that stuff. But for those who do, in order to be in them circles or in them loops like that, you're going to be doing more than just voting for somebody, all right? And so forth and so on. So we need to break this stuff down so that people understand it a little better and can maneuver it a little better. Because we need not to take that as seriously. And what I mean by that is, of course, it's very serious, but to get into it wholeheartedly as if it's some real cure-all or some real cure period or that it's going to really do some different thing, please, it's not going to happen. So rather than to fall for the pie-in-the-sky stuff, that has been given to us year after year after year after year, generation after generation after generation, obviously we need to catch on and realize that that's a joke. They're laughing at us, really, because we don't think that that's the way that stuff works when they know it don't, which is very obvious, a little more obvious today. So with that said, I have just been informed of something that I am so looking forward to, because the Me Woman Movement and several groups, the UNIA, I know several groups that are really striving towards self-determination, independence, and even if we only use those words, there are groups that are still striving to do some very positive and productive kinds of things. Well, it just so happened that Brother Riv, as we call him, Brother Fellows, as we call him, conveyed something to me today or yesterday that I'm just, like, overwhelmed about. And I haven't gotten overwhelmed. No, that's probably not the right word. I haven't gotten so excited, for lack of a better word, about something in quite a while. Well, it appears that there is going to be an event, for lack of a better word, that is going to happen in a few months. And for those who have a little history or know a little history, well, something happened a few years back in Gary, Indiana. And this thing was called the Black Political Convention. Well, this convention was really not only historic, but it was monumental. It also served as a catalyst to launch a lot of campaigns and a lot of real serious work that was happening in our communities nationwide that was dealing with, you know, the political agenda and the political issues and things that were relevant to electoral issues, electoral politics, but politics in general. Well, from that conference came quite a few things, including, you know, ultimately, black mayors, which at that time was, you know, really kind of unheard of, and stuff like that and so on. Well, the reality is, as the years went on, it seemed that the thrust, the fervor, or what have you, for the Black Political Convention, well, it seemed like it just kind of, I mean, for Black politics, based on the Black Political Convention meaning, it seemed like it just kind of started dissipating. It seemed like rather than there being a Black agenda, it ended up being just Black people caught up in the political arena, not really focusing on some of the things that were initially focused on in Gary, Indiana in 1962, because that is when the Black Political Convention took place. Now, I'm saying all this again to say that earlier today I was very, very fortunate to have a discussion, as well as yesterday, and in as such was told that there is going to be a convention coming up. It'll be coming up in a couple of months. And, I mean, it's like an ideal time with all of this going on and people talking about, vote, you know. You hear Trayvon, the situation with Trayvon Martin. Okay, yeah, the thing, solution or what we got to do is vote. Okay. Well, what's the agenda? All right. Where is something concrete? If we're going to be out here and tell people to vote, 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 what is the plan? Well, of course, in most situations, there isn't any. But, again, on the plus side, there is one. So, with that said, there's some brothers and sisters who have come together to begin to put together a Black agenda, a real Black agenda, a national Black agenda. So, while the overriding or the mission that was one of the most pertinent missions for the National Black Political Convention that took place in Gary, Indiana in 1962, one of the primary things is something that we've been talking about over and over and we'll continue to talk about, and that is, of course, the principle, the ideal, the whatever you care to call it, known as unity. Well, that too comes in many degrees, and the Million Woman Movement has now implemented, or shall we say, developed what it feels is a way to deal with unity known as practical unity. Well, other folks have had functional unity and several other forms of unity, but the bottom line is that this overall is what we are striving for, at least one of the things we're striving for. Well, this National Black Political Convention is, too, one of those things. And it is not an endorsement of anything that is of the Republican Party. It is not the endorsement of anything of the Democratic Party. It is not the endorsement of anything necessarily of the Green Party or any other party. Okay? It is relatively nonpartisan. And this is what we did yesterday here in Sleep when we had our session. It was nonpartisan. Personally, well, I won't say just personally, from an organization standpoint, don't care about either one of them, Democrats or Republicans. So we're not stuck on any of that. We have no allegiance to any of that whatsoever. It's going to all be about, at the end of the day, who and what is going to best serve our people, and in doing it in the way that we feel is going to be the best way. So these are the things that we're going to be talking about more in the upcoming week. We have a lot of things we're going to be working on. Of course, our struggle, our fight for justice for Rukia Boyd is still in effect. So we are still asking all of you to please call, email, fax, snail mail, whatever, the so-called officials. Before I leave the program tonight, I will hopefully be able to give you some of those telephone numbers and email addresses again. And certainly you can feel free to email me at nationalmwm@aol.com, and I will forward it to you if you are online or will be online. I'll make sure you get it. It is so important that we let the Chicago officials know that folks all over the country are, in fact, watching, and we're waiting. We are waiting for the official report, because presently this murder has been deemed a justified shooting. And there's no way that that can happen. There's just no way. I mean, we can't allow it to happen. Let's put it that way. That has to be challenged, and it must be actually removed from the books, from whatever. All right? And the other thing that is, of course, of importance at this time is that the detective, I'm thinking of other pieces of this investigation that has really bothered me. The fact that Sister Rukia was taken to the hospital, and from what we were told, for those of you who tuned in before, you heard Sister Rukia's brother say that before a doctor saw Sister Rukia, several hours had passed. So while she was shot in the head, she laid on that bed. She got no service. No one came to look at her. No one came to attend to her for several hours. So essentially, if I recall correctly from what Brother Darian mentioned in our dialogue, was that when the family questioned, what had happened in terms of why didn't somebody come and, you know, to try to see what they could do or whatever, they were told something to the effect that she was in such a severe condition that they didn't want to risk it or something like that. I'm like, what? I mean, it's just ridiculous. Wait a minute. This is a hospital, so you're saying that no one would look at her because they didn't want to risk anything? Well, okay, I'm just confused. But so these things are, you know, going through my brain as we continue to examine this case and realize that there's some stuff here that just makes no sense. But at any rate, the struggle does indeed continue, and we shall indeed continue. So stay tuned, family, because we are definitely going to make certain that some headway happens real soon. I'll just put it like that. Now the other thing that I wanted to mention was, again, going back to the officials in Chicago for a moment, the official report as to what happened on March the 21st has still not been released. And so, again, when you call on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, please indicate in your correspondences that we are waiting for the report. We want to see what the internal affairs people, we want to hear what the whoever it is, the special commission or whatever it was, what are your findings? We want to know Did this detective act appropriately according to your investigation? We want to know, what is the final ruling on this shooting? What is it categorized as? We want to know, you know, whatever information that has come about as a result of this murder, we want to know. So, again, before the program is over, we're going to give you a few numbers that we want you to call. And, again, you know, it's just so important that we continue to do that. So, please, family, make sure you pass that information along. Make sure you encourage others to support, at least call the officials in Chicago and let them know that you are concerned. Fax them, email them, do whatever, but definitely do something. And I can assure you within the next week or so, some additional actions will be provided in terms of, you know, what we foresee happening to make certain that the report, if it hasn't been received within a week, we will have another action step in order to make that happen, as well as Detective Saban. We are demanding that he be removed from active duty. He is presently, from what we were advised, he's presently still on active duty. He's getting paid. He's not in the street, but he's still on active duty. That should not be. He needs to be suspended until that investigation is completed. And that is what the family is requesting, and that is what the people are requesting. So with that said, these are some of the things that we hope you will, you know, convey in your correspondences. Again, we stress that you please be cordial, you know, meaning just stick to the facts, stick to the what it is that you once said. Doesn't, you know, have to be anything animated. It just you know, straight to the point. We want Dante Saban removed, suspended until further notice, particularly until we hear the report, the investigative report, official report. And the other thing, of course, being that this thing of justified shooting, that they need to just, you know, say that was out of place and off the record or whatever. But that's not acceptable. That cannot stand as it is presently. And so those are some of the specifics. We want the report. We want the right Dante statement removed. And this whole idea of justified shooting, that too needs to be recanted. Okay. I'm not even going to add in presently that the family should have been given some form of some official form of apology by the department, of course, and also by the detective who shot Bukea. Okay, so these are just some sidebar things, but I wanted to put that out there to you because that hasn't happened yet either. All right, again, I'll give you more information on who to call very shortly. I'll give you that kind of information very, very shortly. So moving right along, excuse me, there is another case that we've been talking about, and that is, of course, the case of Marissa Alexander. We are still looking into investigating that because even though we're hearing about it, even though we read about it, you know, we always like to talk directly to somebody that is connected to the case. And so we hope that we'll be able to do that soon, but so far we haven't been able to do it. But according to the report that I've seen, I mean, you know, if we're not outraged by that one, then I don't know what it is going to be. But the bottom line is, from what we were told, the sister, Marissa Alexander, is incarcerated as a result of firing her own weapon, licensed weapon, fired it up into the air. And after being, you know, brutalized for quite some time, often being beaten, and it's on record because of the different reports that were, sent in. But anyway, she drew her pistol up in the air, and supposedly this was to scare her husband off, who, had beat her many, many times. And after her shooting in the air to ward him off, the guy went and told the police. The police, he told the police that she attempted to kill him, and the police arrested her. And now, based on law that's in Florida, they can give you a minimum of 20 years, okay, for that type of action. Now, this is really outrageous. First of all, it's outrageous that this was even happening in the first place, meaning that they would lock this sister up after, on their records, they have evidence of her being abused. But the other thing that we find, absolutely insane was, okay, there's a law in Florida that says if you do something like that, that you get a minimum of 20 years, but yet there are laws in Florida, stand your ground, where when it's applied to somebody killing a black male, wait a minute, they would not have gotten arrested if, in fact, people did not, push that button. So I'm trying to see, how does this happen? How is it in one case a black woman can shoot up in the air, not hit anybody, not murder nobody, none of that, but yet she's facing up to 25 years. Yet here you have a white male or half white male, whatever it is, and he kills somebody. And he just walked, just pretty much, went in and walked out. So I'm trying to kind of understand, what I don't get it. I do not get it. But anyway, and I made an error. I believe it was Gary Indiana was 1972. There was another convention in 1962. I got to check on that. But anyway, I want to give you a couple of excerpts from the political convention that took place in Gary, Indiana in 1972. I'm going to try to do that for you. Again, this is very important. I want you to check a little bit of this out. This is Gary, Indiana, 1972. Oh, correction. This was the one in 2004 talking about 1972. Okay, this is a clip. I thought it was one thing, and it really turned out to be something else. It wasn't a clip. I thought it was. This occurred in 2004 in Atlanta. They did have a black political convention, more or less. For some reason, I didn't remember it being called that, and probably because the focal point of it did not represent what I certainly would have thought it. But I can assure you that the Black Political Convention that is being called for this year is a little more representative of what was seen a few years ago. It has that kind of fervor. It has that kind of energy. It has a kind of focus. Of course, it's very inclusive, but it's just not. It's not just the Jews. That's all I can say. I don't want to go much further. But it's definitely with a different flavor. I can say that. And it's going to be very, very, very serious. So I'm going to encourage all of you to please continue to stay tuned to New Day Resurrection Liberation, because we're going to be directly involved in the upcoming 2012 Black Political Convention. Let's hear an overview of the Gary, Indiana Black Political Convention.
I think you are right on point with your comments that, you know, when it comes to you know, when the violence against women, that's just something we want to, like, sweep under the rug, and we don't want to talk about that. Like, we don't
right.
we don't want
to
talk about
Rose. Before we talk, Nikki, I want people to know, tell them who you are and the group that you represent,
sure.
and then we'll really go into some dialogue.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Nikki Patan. I'm the National Historically Black Colleges and Universities and Outreach Coordinator for Black Women's Blueprint, and we
mm-hmm.
are an organization that is all about advocating for the human rights of women of African descent in the United States.
Okay.
So we, you know, we are not just talking about civil rights, which is like, you know, the right to vote and, you know, the rights, you know, equal pay for equal work. We're talking about human rights, so our right to be safe, our right to be protected, and our right to also rely on these institutions in this country, such as the medical and legal institutions, to be there for us and to advocate for us when we are hurt or when we do get, you know, in situations or when, I should say, when situations come for us, once we are placed in situations that put us in harm's way, we should have the same full rights and protections as any other citizen in this country, male or female.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, why do you feel, Nikki, that it is such a disparity, it is such an imbalance in this manner of violence? Why do you feel that when it comes to our women, and again, I'm being very specific because I don't have a lot of statistics about non-black women or non-African women. I don't really, you know, try to have a lot of statistics about the, I mean, I do have some because in doing research, of course, you have to look at the whole thing. But my major and of course, key thing that I look at is the things that's relevant to us as a people, and in this instance, our people, our women and girls. So why do you feel that there is this imbalance where if a brother is killed, you know, you'll see this you know, this big, like we're seeing now, this national
mm-hmm.
uproar. And no, not just kill. If a brother is threatened, like in the Genesis, okay,
yeah.
why do we see that kind of response? But yet, if a sister is killed or raped, why is it that, you know, why do you feel that gets no play? What's happening with that? Why?
Well, I mean, I think the answer to that is complex. I mean, at first when because I also look at violence through, I think probably some people think it's a narrow lens, but I think it's a necessary lens to focus on women of African descent in the United States because I think we've had a very unique experience, and especially for those of us who, you know, come out of this legacy of slavery in this country, you know, I think we often forget that we're, you know, I think in addition to Native American women, but us definitely as a group, we were one of the only groups to be raped and to have that legally and governmentally sanctioned. That, as a matter of fact, without the rape of black women, this country would not be what it is. We drove the economic engine of this nation at its genesis with our bodies. And I think that, you know, a lot of those, you know, that fact alone, I think has a lot to do with why black women don't see justice in this country today, because of how we began. And because there's been no real acknowledgement of that history, there's been no apology for that, and there's really not a lot of understanding or history around that taught to anyone, not just, you know, white folks and white kids or white students, but also not to black people or to any other people of any other color. We don't talk about that, you know, specific part of the legacy. And I think we need to talk about it because I think black women are still bearing the brunt of a lot of the violence in this country. You know, we did at Black Women's Blueprint, we did a preliminary study that we're still confirming, but we did it last year and we found that 60% of African American girls under the age of 18 have been raped. That's an astronomical number, and I can guarantee you that no other ethnic group is seeing rates of sexual assault that high. And so, you know, when you link that to things like PTSD, when you link that to things like, you know, 30% of rape victims get PTSD. So 30% of 60% of our young women who are going off to college or trying to work or trying to, you know, in some cases raise families, you know, they're doing this under, like, an extremely heavy burden. And I think what adds to that burden is when there's a lack of acknowledgement in the community, which I think is, you know, I think people don't quite believe that violence against women is real. or that in some ways that we bring it on ourselves. I know there's a lot of victim blaming and there's a lot of superficial excuses that people want to apply to that violence. But to me, violence is violence. So if you come up to me or if we're in a situation, if I know you, whatever, and I say no, and you still proceed, to me, that's a violent act. And whatever it was that I did doesn't, to me, bear any, you know, responsibility in terms of someone making up their mind that they're going to do this. And I think people think that, you know, women can control it, that if we, you know, dress the right way, if we look the right way, if we don't go out at night, if we don't go to this person's house alone, if we don't drink any alcohol. I mean, the thing is that if that were true, every woman I know would walk around covered up from neck to ankle if she felt like that would really protect her, and it doesn't. Like, age doesn't protect you from it. Money doesn't protect you from it. Clothing doesn't protect you from it. If people choose to be violent, they choose to be violent. And we live, you know, in a violent culture. This is a country that started with war and is still in the midst of war. And so, you know, usually the first act of war is what? To rape the women. That's one of the first acts of war. So we're, I mean, so that's, you know, that's also like, you know, what we're looking at this month is that metaphor of war. And, you know, a lot of everybody's been saying it, the war on women, the war on women. But really, with black women, if you look at us, you know, our rates of poverty are higher in our community. Our rates of sexual assault are higher in our community. And I don't know what a war is besides stripping away someone's bodily protection and then taking away their resources. That's, to me, the very definition of war. So as far as why we don't get the attention, I think that, you know, it feels safe for people. If they can focus on the violence against men, you know, they don't have to worry about what's happening with the women. And then that also, too, means that they would have to turn, you know, the powerful, like, magnifying glass on themselves. And I think a lot of people are not ready to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think, too, that part of the problem also is it begins to dismantle a present paradigm where the inequality is kind of subtle, meaning we tend to think that as a people we are operating, we think that as a people we are operating equally, the majority of our people do, that is. So if one was beginning to examine this thing that we are definitely making certain that it becomes a lot clearer, one would begin to see that, wait a minute, now going back to what you just said a few moments ago, Nikki, if it's a situation of clothing, you know, that being something that, you know, motivates one to do something, well then, why would it not be that if a brother went out here and for whatever reason his presentation was just a bit more provocative, you know, his shirt was tighter, he was showing his abs or whatever. Was somebody trying to rape him?
Probably
not. I
don't
think so. Absolutely
not.
Exactly. So there's some things that are connected to power, you see.
Yeah.
No, in other words, on the average female is the statue, the physicality or whatever of the average female usually cannot go up against a male. So psychologically what's going on in this society is it's almost like, you know, the survival of the fittest, but in the context of I'm bigger than you, stronger than you, and therefore that gives me the right to do whatever I think I want to do because that's the way it is. And this is something that has been adopted by, you know, most males in this society. Now, let me just throw this in there for those of you who are new listeners or whatever. This is not a dialogue about feminism, okay? So I want everybody to know that because that ain't what we're talking about here. This is not that. We're talking about us as a people, what's going on, and having to address our issues and concerns because it's real. And guess what? If it doesn't change, none of us are going to make it. Okay, go ahead.
I agree. Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree that, you know, again, you know, we're not, you know, look, the way I see it is that, you know, we're talking about equal rights here, right? So I don't pay like a woman's tax in this country. You know, I don't pay special taxes to live here. I pay the same taxes as everyone else. But I can't walk around, you know, my country, I can't walk around my world that my ancestors did help build and create and stabilized for a whole nation of people without, you know, very much of a thank you or an apology. Thank you very much. And I can't walk around this place safely. I'm always, you know, like most women I know, looking over my shoulder, or, you know, I've been, you know, approached in ways that have made me feel uncomfortable. For every woman I know, even if she hasn't been sexually assaulted, she's been placed in some uncomfortable situation, whether it's, you know, been she's been followed down the street in someone's car while she was waiting for the bus, or, like, you know, she was alone at night on the train, you know, for whatever reasons. And as much as we want to say, you know, well, don't walk alone or don't do this, I mean, things are real out in the world. People have to work. You can't have somebody escorting you and walking you around. And let's be frank, you know, how many, you know, of our brothers are really willing to step up and do that anyway? I know, you know, I mean, how many are willing to let their mothers or their sisters or their girlfriends or their wives or their even their friends walk to the train or walk to the bus alone? You know, there's, I think also, you know, when we look at, you know, the internalized racism piece to this, that on a certain level, you know, I mean, it's the elephant in the room that we don't want to talk about, but even that whole issue of, you know, the virtue of the white woman versus the lack of virtue of the black woman. And that we're perceived as we don't need as much protection, or you know, we can handle ourselves, or we have so much attitude. And then people are shocked when the rates of sexual assault and abuse in our community are so high. I mean, first of all, nobody even wants to talk about it. And when we do, as you said, you know, the discussion always wants to spin towards feminism or what we're doing wrong or whatever. Look, the way I see it, somebody who chooses to be violent is making a choice to be violent, and they're going to make that choice regardless of whatever choices I make. So I don't, you know, believe in, like, putting that accountability on the person who is the victim. At the same time, you know, you also can't culturally and in the mainstream tear down women and then expect that we're going to be perceived in a way that, you know, that warrants protection from other places, like, to me, the medical and the legal industry. And that's not to all place it on, you know, the cultural aspect of it, but all of these pieces work together. And right now it feels like there's a lot of folks within our community that are sort of working against each other, like our agendas are completely out of line. The way I see it as a black woman, and knowing so many other and working with so many other wonderful, yourself included, black women, you know, one of the things I think that most of us can agree on is that this system that is currently set up is not working for us. And in fact, we are experiencing some of the most powerful detriment and some of the most powerful deprivation in this country, all of which, you know, adds to a lack of protection. That the poorer a woman is, the more prone, the more likely she is to be sexually assaulted and abused. And if the case is that the majority of, you know, like the ethnic group that has the highest percentage of women living in poverty is our community, that lets you know right there that we're an extremely vulnerable population. But if people keep looking at us like we're not vulnerable, like we don't need help, like we don't need protection, like we don't need advocacy or support, you know, you're right, that really doesn't bode well for our community. You know, if people don't start understanding that we need protection and we just need, like, our rights upheld, like, I don't want more than anyone else, but I don't want less either. So,
and see, I think at some point we will definitely have to look closer at some other concepts, meaning, you know, you said something that just really drew my brain, went, oh, okay, and that was that we just want to be equal or have, you know, equal rights, whatever. And what shot into my brain was like, okay, so now whoever said that we were equal, you see, I mean, there's this assumption, and there is this idea. But see, remember, even when you start thinking about what the Constitution says, all men are created equal.
Right.
And so that reality, and even though we know they weren't even talking about black men then, but still, certainly, you know. So the question is, or rather the reality is, even today, the idea of, as women, you know, we're equal. I would dare say that somewhere in the back of our men's minds, many of them, and see, this is why this is so wonderful, because we're saying these things and we're saying it very clearly, we're saying it very consistently and with love. Okay, that's why I say, again, this is not a bashing thing. This is not, you know, any of that other kind of stuff. This is family, we got a problem. Now, let's look at it and let's deal with it. We have to do it together. We have to do it together, okay? So that's the prince we come from. But again, having now done this for a few years, in talking with brothers, I'm connecting with black men who are saying, you know what, you're right. They are man enough to say that what we're saying, a lot of what we're saying, they agree. And as a result, they are beginning to take some extra steps to help deal with this. And I'm saying that because I really, really applaud them because, again, we have to deal with this from many directions, from many levels, and one of them is psychological because some of what's going on, well, we know, you know, a lot of the psychological in that, you know, person want to be violent to you and all that, but I'm saying some of this other stuff, some of the programming of, well, you know, really, I'm the man, and, you know, therefore, I'm really the more, you know, significant, I'm really the more important. That's what's oftentimes going into folks' brains.
Right.
Whether they want to admit it or not. You see?
That's
which
true.
Which lends to the other, you know, some other kind of behavior.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's really interesting. I think about that a lot. And all that I can compare it to is actually a quote. I think it's by Eli Weissel, but I might have that wrong, so I'll double check that. But anyway, the quote basically said, you know, when they came for, you know, he started listing off a bunch of ethnic groups, like when they came for the, you know, for the Armenians, I was silent, and then when they came for the Jews, I was silent, and then when I came for this group, I was silent, and then when they came for me, there was no one left to speak for me.
Right.
So I would suggest that if you're building a self-concept based off of being higher than or above someone else, then you also have to acknowledge the reality that someone is higher than or above you. And I don't know about you, but I'm not very comfortable with hierarchies because I feel like, you know, as human beings and just, you know, I just have a very metaphysical view of the earth. But, you know, I just really feel like we all have something to contribute. We all have something to offer. And I know I might not be strong in the same ways as, you know, as a man, might not even speaking for all men, because there's certainly some men that I'm physically stronger than, and vice versa, there are men who are physically stronger than me. But I feel like, you know, we're all strong in all of our different ways, and more important than that, we're all human beings. And so you have to honor that. And so if somebody says, you know, if I'm in my body, and I'm saying, no, you can't touch my body in that way, in my mind, there's nothing that makes it okay that somebody would supersede my own sovereignty over myself, that somebody's word about my body would be stronger than mine. There's no way I can wrap my brain around that and say, well, just because you're physically stronger, you can tell me what to do with my body. I can't. I really can't roll with that because then what's next? You know, what comes next? If you say that about women, then you have to then, you know, if you follow the order of logic, then you have to say, you know, maybe, you know, black people, because there's less of us, you know, there's less black people than there are white people, then they should have control over what we do. You never know. You know, that to me is like, that's how the dominoes start to fall. So.
Right. And so you raised several wonderful points. And therein is some of the problem, meaning that because there has been a very obvious domination going on from a race perspective, with there being one group of people having a certain type of domination over another, social domination over another, and economic domination and so forth and so on, then this seemed to have left an imprint of some form. And again, what I'm suggesting too, and some of the research will even show this, that, and when I say research training, I'm not just talking about from the book. I'm talking about from talking to grandmom and Aunt Betty and great Aunt Ann and Aunt Mimi. And, you know, this is some of what has happened, meaning, you know, after our men would be beaten down so much, you know, from a systematic standpoint, then would come home. And because home was the only place that they could assert themselves, you see. And therefore, that person at home was the one that got what, you know, they really wanted to do. You see, they couldn't do that, you know, at the job or, you know, whatever. So when you look at a certain time period in history, these are some of the things that you begin to realize. And this is some of the baggage that we're now dealing with today. And see, this is why we've got to break this thing down from a historical perspective. Because we can't look at addressing this issue the way other people do. I think Nikki said that earlier. And so I'm just going to expand on that and say that we have to look at this in a holistic way as well. Meaning, now what was also said is something to the effect of, you know, yes, we have what one would call basic fundamental rights. But in a society such as this, as in other societies, if you can't prove that, if you can't maintain that, then guess what?
Right.
You have a problem. We have a problem. And this is, again, surely there's fundamental things that we know are just. However, the way this thing goes here from a systematic standpoint, if you can't prove or maintain what you think, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's why we now have got to deal with this all across the board, meaning we've got to show our strength and our power. You know, and like you said, we have many strengths and powers. We're diverse and so forth. But we have to now understand the necessity of self-defense.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about physical. I'm talking about financial. And I'm not talking about, oh, you know, I'm making more money than the brother. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about from a political, financial, you name it. We have to begin as African women in America, in North America, we have to begin to deal with these issues for real, meaning we can talk all day and night, well, we are equal, we have rights, blah, 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 and we are right, it's true. But the plan of action need to be, okay, now I said it, now let me show you how I'm going to show you that's the truth.
Yeah.
This is
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel, you know, if we don't advocate for ourselves, if we don't speak up for ourselves, you know, who will, you know? And I think that's an unfortunate statement on the one hand, but then on the other hand, I think that that's a true statement for pretty much any group or any individual out there. You know, power concedes, you know, nothing without a fight. Nobody's just going to hand over, you know, what you think you're owed or what you think you're due. Anything that you want to do in this life, you have to work for it. So I know that if I want to hold, you know, the country that I live in and that, you know, and that I was born in, and I have, you know, obviously no control over that, but now that I'm here and now that I'm a citizen, yeah, absolutely, I'm definitely going to demand, you know, that my human rights be acknowledged and also be upheld. And I don't think that that has anything to do with feminism. I don't think that has anything to do with any sort of ism except for the fact that I believe in my own sense of freedom as a human being, just like I believe in freedom for other groups, you know, across, you know, this world. I don't really understand why I need to, you know, just throw away my freedom and say, well, oh, you know, that's just the way things are. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that. And I feel like if our ancestors believed that, we would all be living out a very different existence right now. But I think that's another thing that people fail to realize, that the freedom that we live with right now, even the freedom to disagree about men and women and their equality and to even have conversations about that, we can only have that conversation because someone decided that being a slave wasn't what they wanted to be and wasn't what they wanted for, you know, the generations to come after them. So, you know, for me, the best that I can pay honor to that freedom that so many people fought for is to continue to fight for mine and to know that as a human being that I'm worth that and that
That's
I have,
right.
you know, way more to contribute to this world than to be, you know, somebody's object of violence.
Mm-hmm. And I really like what you just said. You put that in a very, very interesting context. You know, someone else's object for violence. That's very, very interesting and on point. because, you know, once you become familiar with some of this, you begin to realize just how, you know, true and how real that is, you know, that a person just becomes an object. And as a result, you know, oh, wow, that was a deep statement. But, you know, I understood it quite well. I'm sure that some of the other listeners, you know, heard it and understood it as well. It is a situation that really warrants not only a type of proaction, but it has to be very precise now. It has to be very intentional. And, you know, that I was so happy to meet the sisters this past March up at the UN. It was a very, very
You were so fortunate to have you in the room. So fortunate. Absolutely. We couldn't have planned it better. We're thrilled and excited.
It really was funny. It was so, it seemed like it was planned, you know, almost.
Right, exactly. That's how you know it was meant to be, because it seemed like too perfect that you were there.
That's right.
It was amazing.
Yes. But you know what, Nikki, I tell you what, for me, because I ended up leaving the room because I had to go and just kind of think for a minute. And as a matter of fact, two of the brothers that was in the session, I saw two of them today, because we had a session earlier about some other things, and it just so happened they hadn't seen each other since March, and then they remember, oh, yeah, you were there. And he said, yeah, I was there. And the one brother said that he had to leave the room because with some of the stories that were being told, he felt himself, you know, tears was coming in his eyes. He didn't want nobody to see it. So he said he had to leave the room, you know.
Yeah.
But I
hear that a lot, but that's one of the things that I think we have to stop, though, and that men have to, you know, that's, I think, part of that privilege, like, that they, which I know is a very, like, loaded word, but I would say that that's a part of you know, having a bit of male privilege, is that you can step out of the room when stories like this happen. There's so many women that I know that I probably would love to step out of the room, but can't, because this is all our story. It's all our collective story, and really, I think one of the best ways that people can support, because I know people hear about this issue and they go, oh, well, how can I help? I feel so helpless. One of the best ways I think people can really help with this, or just support that this is even happening, is to just be a witness, just to be there, and to hear, and to listen, and to not, you know, shut your ears or turn your face. And I know it gets hard to walk out of the room, but to let the tears flow and to let people see that it breaks your heart too.
Right.
Like, I think that's one of the ways that we begin to, you know, to move forward from this and to understand just how deeply it affects all of us. Because it's not just a women's issue, it's an everybody issue. Because these women that are hurt are somebody's daughter, that's somebody's sister, that's somebody's wife, that's somebody's grandmother. It's somebody, you know. And the fact is that it's hurting men too. And because these systems in place don't even work for women, there's no way in the world they're going to work for men at all. I've heard plenty of stories of men trying to go to the police or a hospital after they've been, you know, molested or abused or assaulted or harassed, and people will laugh in their face, not believe them. You know, that's what people don't get, is that when you fail to protect, you know, the women in these scenarios, you also fail to protect the men, and so then you have a system that's failing everybody. It's not just a women's problem at all.
But I think because for such a long time, it seems like, somehow we're able to, you know, persevere, we're able to survive, you know. And so as a result, it seems like it's just taken for granted that, well, it's okay. I mean, I know that's bad or whatever, but you'll get through it. And we've seen this over the years. And so now I think that people have become somewhat desensitized to the situation. I think that the system has also created a kind of visualization where we are not only, there's a certain type of minimalization of us as women through media. I mean, you don't see through any videos the type of imagery that you see, you'll see with men like you see with the women. So automatically, on a consistent basis, you are seeing a certain thing of, well, they really ain't muffin anyway, or, you know, they're to be taken very, you know, this you're they're constantly getting fed this, and they started at it very young, so that these notions are fed constantly on, and then by the time they reach a certain age, it's already in their mind, oh, yeah, they ain't, she ain't nothing, they're not nothing. And so we're looking at, you know, a disconnect, you know, and it's going on every single day in several different kinds of ways. And it's directed specifically at us.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that has to be dealt with. It has to be looked at a lot closer, and then we come up with ways where we begin to attack it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, that everybody says, like, you know, you'll survive, you'll get through it, you know, and that's the response. And see, my thing is that I'm tired of just surviving. I'm ready to get to thriving. That's what I'm ready for. I'm ready for that. Like, you know, people can survive. You know what surviving is? Like, surviving's like the bare minimum. It's like living off of, like, the least, you know, appetizing, least appealing things, but hey, you're still alive. And I mean, I would challenge that with, well, what kind of a life is that? And don't we want better for ourselves? And don't we think we deserve better? And don't we think our children deserve better? I certainly think they do. I was at an event last night, and Grace Lee Boggs spoke. And, you know, for folks who are unfamiliar with her, Grace Lee Boggs is a 97-year-old activist that did a lot of work with the Black Panther Party in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And she, one of the most profound things that she said is that, you know, it's you know, it's time for us to get to a visioning politic versus a protest politic. That if you want the world to be a better place, it's more than just complaining or acknowledging that the wrong things have happened or have been done. It's time to get to imagining how it is we want the world to be. Because without that imagination, you know, we can fight all we want to, but then let's say we win the fight, then how do we know what should come in its place? How do we know, you know, what to work for instead? So for me, I'm all about, you know, visioning, you know, what the world would look like for myself and for, you know, women who come from where I come from. What does a safe world mean for us? What would it mean for us to live, you know, and be healed, live and be respected, live to be, you know, cherished and loved? What does that look like? What does that feel like? I feel like until we can answer that question as a culture, you know, we're really spinning our wheels, and we need to get to that. It's time to get beyond just telling survivors, hey, you'll get over it, you'll get through it. Yeah, we know, Black women, strong Black women, I got it. I'm so strong, I can take anything. But the question is, should I? Should I have to take anything and everything?
And in doing so, how does that really affect you? What does that really, to have to be placed in that position constantly, ongoingly, in that way, what does that really say about you, you see?
Yeah.
And so these two are things that have to be looked at closer. But in speaking of what the sister mentioned about being, you know, I do agree that we have to look into what we want things to be. But for me, I think that is what has been happening all along. What I feel has also happened, though, is that folks sold us out. You see, because some of the same dialogue, some of the same things that were said 30, 40, 50 years ago are being said right now. So people have been, when you listen to Paul Robeson or, I mean, you know, the sister, her name just popped out of my mind. I was going to say sister.
Grace Lee Boggs,
It's Bia something. It'll come back to me. But again, I'm saying we've had people who were visionaries, had vision, did stuff, knew what they wanted the world to be and so forth. But periods in time come, and somehow it gets infiltrated.
Yeah.
And then we get traded, you see.
Right.
You think about the 60s, and yes, while there were protests and all that, you had some other stuff going on too. For real.
Yeah.
And it had an impact. But then, all of a sudden, folks got out of school, went into the corporate world, and lo and behold, something changed. Something happened.
Yeah.
You see? And so, you know, it's so much that this entails, but I dare say, you know, while we say keep your eye on the prize, we really need to clarify that. We really need to make that clear. That, and you use some great keywords, and I love it, because in this day and age, this is some of the jargon, this is some of the language that must be said, and that is sovereignty. That is, you know, my human rights. Okay, I mean, you know, words like this, to me, is what will differentiate, you know, from then to now. This will show the progression, because these statements are, in fact, world, global concepts.
Yes.
You see, it's not just, I want to be free, or, you know, I want to be independent. Mm-mm, no. When you start using words such as sovereignty and you know, my human rights, not just, you know, human rights, my human rights.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, totally different ballgame. So
yes.
I'm just so thankful to have met you and to have met, you know, the sisters of the organization and have kept in contact now. And again, I think we are going to set some examples. I mean, I truly, truly believe that, because it is so important that sisters, that black women, that women of African descent in the U.S. begin to connect in if not in any other way, in this way, in this issue, in these concerns. If in no other way, because this will cross, it'll just cross all of the barriers.
Absolutely.
It will not matter about religion. It will not matter about social status. It will not matter about none of that. You see, this thing right here is going to connect us all across the
Absolutely.
Board.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to show it. We're going to show the examples.
Definitely. And we, you know, we just want to thank you so much for, you know, again, you know, staying in contact with us and being such a trailblazer. You know, I mean, I think, you know, one of the most important things, you know, even as I'm talking about, you know, the visioning, you know, politics, you know, part of, I think, creating a strong vision is acknowledging, you know, what the picture has always looked like and who's been painting it. You know, and who has been, you know, revisioning the world. We certainly know that we come out of a legacy of people, especially black people, who were talking about the human rights of black folks, Malcolm X being, you know, one of the biggest, you know, most vocal folks who talked about that. So this is not for us, definitely not like a new, this imagining, this visioning, but I think that in recent years, a lot of, especially our young people, and I've been a teaching artist for the past decade, so I stay, you know, I used to teach at Rikers Island, and, you know, I stay in close contact with a lot of our young people, and I think for a lot of them, you know, they are visioning the world in new ways, but I think having a little bit of trouble kind of getting it out there amidst all the other noise that the mainstream creates. I know some wonderfully talented, you know, young people who are using their imaginations on, you know, what the world can look like. And I think if we can utilize a lot of that imaginative, creative, artistic, you know, power, and we can combine that, you know, with, you know, the ability to strategize and organize and build unity, but also healing, I think that's a lot of also what's been missing for us is healing as a culture and as a people. And to understand that, like, the more we acknowledge the humanity in others, you know, the more we can really acknowledge the humanity in ourselves. And to do that is a beautiful thing. To come into your own humanness is a beautiful thing. You said something earlier about, you know, the way that, you know, folks can be brainwashed and thinking, well, she's not nothing. Well, she's not, you know, to me, in order for someone to think of another human being as nothing, you must think mighty little of yourself.
Exactly.
Because I don't think those two things can exist in the same place. I can't, like, you know, and there's, trust me, there's plenty of people who I'd rather not spend my time around, but I don't, you know, I don't look at any, you know, human being and go, oh, well, but that person's just nothing. Well, they might not, you know, be my cup of tea, but that doesn't mean that they don't have their own humanity and that humanity should be violated. Absolutely not. You know, so we have to really start, I think, acknowledging, you know, the humanities in others, but also acknowledge that in ourselves. And in order to do that, we're gonna have to do some healing. We're gonna have to, you know, crack open.
And, yes.
Some
yes,
of this stuff.
And there again is really a key factor for us as a people to do this work, to really, you know, confront it and deal with it. But, of course, with the intention of healing. I mean, to come out of this as whole as possible, and certainly, you know, our goal has to be healing. And I think that's very, very important that we make certain that that's, like, a key element in the things that we're doing. The sister's name just came to me again. Bea Richards was... Okay. So, you know, there's so many... But let me also say that when you spoke of El Shabazz Malcolm X and talking about human rights, do you know who one of the sisters who helped to influence him?
Please.
Queen Mother Moore.
Yes.
Okay. See, and this is why it's so important that we as women make certain that our people know who some of our women were and are.
Yes.
Because we do a disservice. We do a disservice, you see, because Queen Mother Moore was one of the people, the first people to go into the UN talking about reparations for African people in America.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I always say that it all started, this whole civil rights fight, human rights fight, it all started with black women. All of it. You can trace it back to us every time.
And not to talk about, well, that's another, I'll go there later and talk about Mother Rosa Parks. Prior to Sydney.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was organizing around sexual assault survivors, and people just have no concept.
Yes.
They have no clue that that's a part of our history, but it is, that those organizing techniques that were utilized, you know, to put together the Montgomery, you know, bus boycott, those were skills that were honed around sexual assault survivors. So,
But we're going to make sure they know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're
going to
make sure that people know, because it has to be understood that this situation has to be dealt with in a certain kind of way, and we have to provide information. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we have to deal with things from a historical perspective. And that means from as much of the beginning of it to present day. You see, because the way this thing has been looked at previously is in a very short period of time. You know, usually if you're looking at it from a person being abused, you know, they want to look at the family, they want to look at the person's family prior to that generation or to that particular era, and within a good 20 years or whatever. But see, for us, you know, we got to look at this whole picture. And I'm talking about whole picture as in 200 years, 300 years, you see.
Yes,
and this,
absolutely,
again, is what distinguishes what we're doing, as you know, my sister, and that is we're looking at the history of this as it specifically applies to us. No other group of women can deal with this or talk about this or address this the way that we can. Because we're the only ones that this has happened to. Even with the so-called indigenous people, the native peoples, which some of us were that too, they was here. Well, these people went and got us and brought us here.
Right.
So no one else has that story.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, and that's, I think that's another piece of the history that people miss, that even, you know, on slave ships, you know, black women were kept on the decks. You know, they weren't really kept down below. They were kept on the deck so they could always be available for servicing the captain and the crew. But because of their position on the decks of the ship, they were able to organize mutiny. And, in fact, were able to turn some ships around. They were able to, you know, overturn some ships. They were basically able to prevent some folks from being enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
And if they couldn't prevent it, some of them would throw themselves overboard in protest and in mutiny. I mean, I think that, you know, when you look at that and when you look, I mean, and maybe that's where, you know, part of the myth about us being strong and us being fighters comes from, because we were leading some of the first, you know, I call them like little mini revolutions, you know, on those ships. And those are stories that, you know, a lot of folks in our community and just a lot of folks in the country just are not aware of. And I think that tells the tale of how, you know, black women have been, you know, the guardians. We have been the ones that have been, you know, I think really just standing the guard, like, in a lot of times silently, in a lot of ways, you know, to great detriment and danger and violence to ourselves. But I think that's something that we've always taken on in the community. And now I feel like it's time that, you know, part of that protection and part of that love and part of that concern and that advocacy, that has to come back to us. It has to come back, because we're right now, I feel like we're in desperate need of it. We're getting ripped apart in the mainstream media. We're getting ripped apart in the medical industry, in the legal industry. Mm-hmm. We're getting ripped apart, you know, economically. And we need to really turn that around, because I think that we're, you know, we're the mothers of the world. You know, our legacy is that everything and everyone comes from the African woman.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So we have to protect that legacy. People are trying really hard to destroy it, and I think they're, you know, trying so hard because it's so powerful.
Yes.
And we can't let that happen.
Well, that's why on May the 12th, we are calling for a National Day of Action. And the National Day of Action is, of course, to help protect and defend the mother of civilization. You see, because we have to let it be known who the mother of civilization is. Because if we're not careful, we'll end up, and if not right now, later down the line, we'll end up with somebody else being the mother of civilization if we don't start claiming it now and letting it be known and making it clear who that is. So we're going to begin to make certain that we put that language out there so that anybody even dreams of trying to, you know, come up against that, they're going to know well in advance that's not a good thing to try to do. So, you know, again, this is May the 12th. And it'll be, and you'll be definitely, in fact, I'm going to speak on it when I come up to New York. Oh, we got to get to that part, too. I'm coming up to New York next week.
Oh, yes. We can't wait. We're so excited. We're so excited for that. Can I tell people what we're doing? Because I'm really excited.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we're doing a rally cry in Harlem, and that's ending Black Women's Blueprint's month-long series on the question, is rape war? We've had a lot of lovely events to kind of try to deconstruct that metaphor and see if that really applies. Is rape war on Black women? And we, as an organization, we say yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking about that in a number of different ways. And so our final event is the event that you'll be at, that you're going to be speaking at, and we're so excited to have you and to represent with you. And we'll get to talk more about the Day of Action on May 12th. But for all of us who want to join us for the Rally Cry in Harlem, we're going to give some space to survivor stories. I'm actually going to perform some spoken word and do a little bit of speaking. And basically what it is that it's an opportunity for Black women from our community to get up and tell, you know, what has happened to them and what they've experienced. And it's also an opportunity to rally folks, you know, not only for the Day of Action coming up on May 12th, but just to rally them to this notion that there is this fight for human rights that has to happen. And we're going to be talking about strategies and the best way to advocate for that. So that's happening this Wednesday, April 25th from 6 to 9, when we will be at City College, which is located at 160 Convent Avenue. And I think we're going to be in the Shakur Center, if you want to find us on campus. And again, we're going to start from 6 to 9. We also want folks to come in and bring or to wear T-shirts to decorate, because we're going to have some supplies out so that if people, you know, don't feel comfortable speaking, but maybe they want to put a message on their shirt, we're all showing up in green shirts because I think green turquoise is like the color for sexual assault prevention. April is Sexual Assault Prevention Month. So we want to make sure we create some space for women in our community to tell their stories. There's lots of speak outs that happen across the country during this month, but very few that are about women of African descent. So we want to make sure that we give space to the women in our community to speak. We're going to hear from you, and we're so excited to have you at this event. Like, I can't tell you how excited we are to have you speak and to have you share. You know, also what this fight, what this acknowledgement, what this advocacy work, what this work has looked like. You know, a lot of us, you know, have been working in this movement for varying lengths of time, but you have, I think, a very unique insight to this whole process of, you know, how it used to be and the shape and the legacy and the spectrum that it's taken on since then. So we're interested to have you, you know, come in and let us know, you know, what part of this legacy we hold and
you
how
know,
we strategize from this point forward.
And it's just very, very interesting to observe how we are connecting these dots. And the thing that I like a lot is that, see, with me, and I'm seeing it with others as well, to put less emphasis on the generations per se, meaning, you know, what I've learned to do is to not put this situation into a thing of older and younger.
Right.
It has to be a reality, whatever that reality is, and that's what we're dealing with, you see. Because what I found is, in terms of the movement in general, actually, but of course specifically in terms of us as women, we get caught up in these kind of things of young and old, and what ends up happening, it becomes a revolving door.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea we only had 90 seconds. I thought we were on too long tonight. I've just been advised we only have 90 seconds.
Oh my goodness.
So
we just had a good old time talking.
And we didn't. But I tell you what, there's a possibility we've been doing a special edition leading up to that day. So I'm going to get back to you on that. And if possible,
beautiful,
we'll get you back on because we need to finish this one. I've been with
yes,
you.
Yes, we do. This is such a good conversation. Thank you so much
all
for
right,
having Phil, me on.
I am so sorry. I put in for a small period of time and just thinking we were just going to talk briefly, but this was much more than I thought, and I'm so happy that it was. We thank all
absolutely
of you for tuning in, and thank you, Nikki. We're going to get back this week, okay? I'll let
yes,
I'll call
yes
you.
Yes, we will see you Wednesday.
So
take
much
care.
All right. Peace to you all. We leave you with our greeting, and that, of course, is Ma'at Hoshem. Without justice, there will be no peace. Peace to you all. Peace, Nikki. Talk to you later.
Peace. Take care.
All right.